Okay, Parshas Boy is a parsha full of Hashkocha Protis, Yisias Mitzrayim, of a whole new beginning of mitzvahs, Chodesh Zelachem, which is very appropriate going into Rosh Chodesh. I'd like to focus though on something we never talked about in the past, and that is right at the end of the parsha, the mitzvah of Tefillin. Certain elements of mitzvahs Tefillin that not only important to know, to say nice about Torah, about a table, but it's actually important to understand the concepts of Tefillin, otherwise it's likely one is not even yet to the mitzvah b'chlal. I'll show you an interesting Shulchan Aruch brings over here in Simon Chof Hei, Seif Hei, in Hilchos Tefillin, Yechavim ha'nechoson, a person has to have kavana when he puts them on, She'tzivona Kodesh Baruch Hu lehaniach arba parshas elu, that Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us a command to put on these four parshas, Sheyesh bem yichud shmoi v'tzias Mitzrayim, that talks about the Shkocha Protis and Tzias Mitzrayim, al azroya k'neged alev, on the arm, next to the heart, v'larosh k'neged amoyach, etc., etc. So, every mitzvah needs kavana. Yeah, every mitzvah shrichas kavana, you pass on at Simon Samach. So why is it over here, yechavim ha'nechoson, shetzivana kodesh baruch hu? What's the idea over here? So the Mishnah Berurah, Sifkot Tesvah, brings a bach. And it writes this: Kosov habach b'simn ches tam nizeh. Why did it say over here you got to have kavana? B'dechsev v'hoi l'chola ois al yodcho, that it should be a sign on your arm. Leman tia toiras Hashem v'ficho ki b'yodcho zoko hitziacho. In other words, since we connect the pulling on your arm in order that something should happen, so he explains the yira that shows us ki ikah hamitzvah v'kiyumo, the main mitzvah of tefillin and the kiyum of mitzvah tefillin tuluya b'kavana. If toloi with kavana, sheichavim b'shas kim hamitzvah, that one has to have kavana during the time one puts on the mitzvah, one puts on the tefillin. In other words, tefillin is not about just performing the mitzvah; it's about having the das and realizing the ideas behind the tefillin. And that's why, as an Indian, to say beforehand, to say the shem yichud, to understand what tefillin is all about. So I'd like to this week give a few, three messages of the idea behind the parashas of tefillin. What tefillin is supposed to represent and how it's supposed to help us focus on our avodas Hashem. In Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Tes, the pasuk says, "V'hoyu l'chola ois al yodcho," it should be to you as an ois al yodcho, on your arm, "ulezikoroin bein einecho," and a zikoroin and a remembrance between your eyes. Laman tia teres Hashem v'ficho, in order that the words of Hashem should be in your mouth. Ki biyod chazoko hitziocho Hashem Mitzrayim, because the strong hand of Kodesh Baruch Hu took out Mitzrayim. So it said over here, if you look carefully, it says v'hoi l'chola ois al yodcho ulezikoroin bein einecho. Okay, zikoroin bein einecho means that it should be a remembrance between your eyes. Now, so the one diuk is in the pasuk, it says over here as well the word yodcho, yud dalad chof, yodcho. Okay, yud dalad chof. That's one place where it talks about the mitzvah of tefillin in this week's parasha. If you carry on later on in the parasha, it says in the last pasuk of the parasha, "For hoya lo ois al yodcho," it should be an ois al yodcho yud dalad chof hey, not yud dalad chof, but yud dalad chof hey. Ulatoytafois bein einecho. It doesn't say zikorin bein einecho. It says ulatoytafois bein einecho. Okay. So what's the idea over here, that the Torah changes its lashon from ois al yod cho with a yud dalet chof to ois al yod cho with yud dalet chof hey? And secondly, what's the understanding over here when it says ulzikorin bein einecho, referring to tefillin shirosh, it should be a zikorin between your eyes, and later on it says ulototafos bein einecho, be a totafos between your eyes. What's the meaning behind this? So the halacha is, it's a beautiful vort from Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe has this yisod in many, many places. He brings it in Darash Moshe many, many places. He says it like this. And Rav Moshe unfortunately saw this with his own eyes, and that's why he's not saying this as a, you know, as a theoretical understanding of things. He actually saw this practically, this is the case. He says there's a halacha that teaches us from the word yod cha, yud dalud chof hey, yeah, yod cha, this hey is a, makes it into like something like a feminine. Okay, so yud dalet chof hey makes it into a feminine. From there, the Gemara learns that it's got to be al yadcha al yad smol. It's got to be in your left hand. Why? Because it says lidvrei shbo yad shehu keha, the weaker arm. Tefillin is got to be on your weaker arm. And even somebody who is ambidextrous, a person who is left-handed, it's got to be on his weaker arm, put it on his right hand. So the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh already asks straight away, Aruch Chaim HaKadosh asks, why is it that pulled by this particular mitzvah, just by this mitzvah we start focusing on the weaker arm? Everywhere else in the Torah is a mitzvah to focus on the right hand first. If you do a mitzvah, use your right hand. You look at an esrog, what's more choshev, put it in the right hand. Right? The mitzvah, even when you give tzedakah, you should give it with your right hand. It's a mitzvah to do, when you're washing your hands, wash your right hand first. Everything is a right hand first, the right hand has kadima. Just when it comes to doing a mitzvah on the arms, which is the most clear mitzvah of actually performing something on the arm itself, not just doing a performance, but doing on your arm itself, there the Torah uses dafka the left hand. Seems strange, the Torah uses dafka the right hand, why dafka here the left? So the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh says the answer is because he says all these things dinim adini yisodim api kabbalah, but he said it's because the left is next to your heart, and therefore when you put the tefillin on your left hand it's closer to your heart, and therefore it's supposed to be a sign to your heart of how to perform mitzvahs. Rav Moshe is not happy with that, and Rav Moshe says if that's the case it should always be in your left. Why is it that a person who is left handed has gone the right if it's supposed to be closer to the heart? His heart is not in a different place in his body. Okay, and therefore, if that's the case, if he says in him having closer to the heart, it should be on his left as well. Why have it on your left? Says Rav Moshe, and Rav Moshe is basing this on bitter experience. He says, he asks in many places al Torah, why is it, how is it, that you have a generation who came from Poland, who came from Lithuania, who came from Europe, who are Ovdei Hashem, who are Yirei Shemaim, who had Mesiras Nefesh even for mitzvahs, and they were able to give up the job every year of Shabbos, and they'd go on during Shabbos, go to shul, and after Shabbos, on Sunday morning, they're worried about getting a new job, and they'll have a job for another few days until they get thrown out of the jobs again. And these people, Mesa Nefesh for Shabbos, asks Ramesha, how was it possible that these people, who are Mesa Nefesh for Mitzvah, had children who Mechalei Shabbos? How is it these people had children who went off the derech in a tremendous, tremendous way? How was that Shaykh? Says Ramesha, because, this is a very famous piece of Ramesha, is because, now what's the answer? Shveres Zayin Yid. They used to keep Shabbos, but they'll come to the house and they'll krech, say, oi, it's not easy being Jewish. Says Rav Moshe, that krecht, that sigh, that complaint destroyed a generation. Says Rav Moshe, listen to this gewaldige Wort. Says Rav Moshe, many people keep mitzvahs, they perform a mitzvahs, in a way that shows a mitzvah to them is difficult. It's not easy. So you say the fum tzara agra, the more pain, the more gain, but it's not so. Says Rav Moshe, if a person keeps Shabbos because he's forced to keep Shabbos, he'll get schar, no doubt. But what's going to happen is, if there comes a situation where there's a nesoyin, a very, very strong nesoyin, to be gaining from the opposite direction, by not keeping Shabbos, he'll drop Shabbos. That's it. He won't keep Shabbos anymore. If these children of these people who made Yerida, yeah, they traveled to America, and they said, "Oh, it's so difficult to keep Shabbos." If these kids find an option, if they find a way out to live in the Golden of Medina without keeping Shabbos, they'll do that too. So, to Moshe, the only way to ensure that a mitzvah is kept for generations, the only way to make sure that every nisoyan that you'll go through, you'll still keep the mitzvah, is to show and to understand and to see that the mitzvah is not there trying to trip you up, making it difficult for you. On the contrary, the mitzvah is there that gives you chiyus, it gives you life, it gives you koyach. Shabbos is not a difficult mitzvah to keep. It's not a mesiras nefesh to keep Shabbos. On the contrary, it's makora bracha. Kihi Makara Bracha. This is Makara Bracha. Shabbos is Bracha. And therefore, the greatest Nesoyin can come on your doorstep, a person who's not Chas V'Shalom going to drop off Shabbos, because that is his lifeline. He won't cut his lifeline off if he realizes that is where he's getting his Shefa from, that's where he's getting all his benefits from. Says Rav Moshe, listen to this. The weaker arm is the left arm. it shows doing a mitzvah with weakness. Says Rav Moshe, what you should do is, there is no weak arm when it comes to tefillin. Your weaker arm should be your yad yamin. In other words, what we're doing with tefillin is, we're actually putting tefillin on your right arm. What are you talking about? I've got right arm and left arm. Says Moshe, no, your weaker arm, your nisyonus, your wish to do mitzvahs in a weaker way, in a way that is not so enthusiastic, we are telling you, well, I'm just telling you, it's not a left arm. You think it's a left arm, it's not, it's a right arm. There's no mitzvah that you should do in a weak way. Take your left arm and make it into a right arm. Take your weakness in mitzvahs and make it into a right arm. That is the consideration of the mitzvah of tefillin, is such that you can take something that is ultimately beforehand a weak arm, which is a left arm, and make that is your right arm. That you don't have any left arms. Both of them are right arms. Can you sound the godless to that thought? It's phenomenal. It's not Peshay putting tefillin on your left arm. That is, you don't have a left arm. There's no weakness in mitzvahs. Make your left into your right. That is as strong as your other arm. There's no weakness in mitzvahs. Make both arms with the same enthusiasm and the same strength. Says Moshe, if that's the case, how do we do that? We do that with having a tefillin shorosh. Understanding, appreciating, looking into the mitzvahs. Asks Moshe, if that's the case, why do we put on the shorosh first and then put on the shaliyad? To first understand what mitzvahs are all about and then put it on the arm to realize that both arms are right. Moshe, is a danger over there. The danger is that if a person starts philosophizing too long about mitzvahs, he won't end up doing them. Because you go to this philosophy class and that philosophy class, and what do you say about this and how do you say about that? I don't quite understand, therefore I'm not going to do it. No. First, ein kelekeinu, ein kadoneinu, there's no such thing besides Rabbi Yishlem. Then you can start, mi kelekeinu, mi kadoneinu. Then you can start asking questions. But first you put it on. First you do the action. And then you can follow through with your machshava. The kliach of tefillin is such that in the most difficult situations, the tefillin is teaching us that one is ultimately only gaining by doing a mitzvah. And if that's the case, it could be the most difficult situation, the most difficult trials and tribulations can try and tempt a person to go off the derech, and a person who is connected with a mitzvah cannot possibly be swayed. I'd like to read you out a beautiful story, Dafka, about tefillin and Mesiras Nefesh and tefillin. This is Rabbi Pesach Kron. I think it's a book in Reflections of the Maggid. I'm not 100% sure. I haven't got it written here. I'd like to read it out as follows. He says, in 1940, Rebbe Yamin Shachner was hauled from his home in a small town of Zusnovce in Poland to the first of seven concentration camps he would eventually be in. Among the few possessions that he managed to take along with him were his tefillin. Rebbe Yamin always kept a close watch on his tefillin, shielding and safeguarding them as though they were his life's greatest treasure. Every day, when he was sure that none of the Nazi guards were looking, he would remove the tefillin from their hiding place, don them on his hands and head, and say the Shema Yisrael. Others in the barracks, inspired by his actions, would borrow the tefillin and do the same. Rebbe Yamin was transferred from concentration camp to concentration camp until he was eventually brought to a slave labor camp in Markstadt. Aside from the toil demanded and torture inflicted there daily, the place was an area of such filth and of conditions so inhumane that survival was difficult. Food was scarce and hard to come by, and every day Jews perished from disease and starvation. When he first came to Markstadt, Rabbi Yamin was confronted by an SS guard who demanded to know whether he was a carpenter. Instinctively, he replied that he was, although actually he had never built anything in his life except a family. Because he knew that these deemed useless were put to death at once, Rabbi Yamin decided to claim that he was indeed handy. In order to survive, he would try anything. It was in the carpenter's woodshed, under a loose floorboard, that Rabbi Yamin hid his tefillin when he was in Markstadt. Throughout the weeks and months of his stay, every day without fail, he and others who dared would disregard the privation and exhaustion and remove the tefillin from under the loose wooden plank. Each man would in turn wrap the tefillin around their hands and on their head and tearfully say the Shema Yisrael, proclaiming even in the most dire situations the uniqueness of oneness of Hashem and Klal Yisrael's devoted loyalty to him. Then the tefillin would be hidden away once again. One day, a particularly vicious SS guard walked into the woodshed unexpectedly and saw the tefillin. Realizing this must be a religious item of sorts, he began to scream in blood-curdling yells, demanding to know what and whose they were. Frozen with terror, no one dared say a word. The Nazi began to yell again, this time threatening to kill everyone in the room if he didn't get a reply. Rabbi Norman's words somehow made it out of his throat. This used to belong to a young boy who died recently, he said softly. But if he died and you all kept these things here, then they belong to you now, the guard retorted in anger. And with that he ordered Rabbi Yonah to come outside with him. Rabbi Yonah had no choice but to obey, for if he did not comply, he knew he would be killed immediately. Outside and within the hearing of those inside the shed, the guard began to beat Rabbi Yonah mercilessly. His screams and cries pierced the hearts of everyone inside, until they could no longer stand it. They ran to the barracks kapel and beseeched him to go out to the Nazi guard and beg for mercy. None of the regular inmates would dare ask a Nazi soldier for a favour. Only someone who had the confidence of the oppressors could even make an attempt. Rabbi Yonah's friends knew that only the kapo would intervene on their behalf. The kapo pleaded with the Nazi guard and finally agreed to stop beating Rabbi Yonah. The Nazi then ordered Rabbi Yonah to march back into the barracks. When he walked in, the others were shocked by his appearance. He was bleeding from multiple body wounds and was clutching his ear. His hearing was impaired for the rest of his life from that beating. The guards ordered that the religious articles be burned at once, and he announced he would be coming back to see if they were in flames. Rabbi Yonah didn't say a word to anyone, but went right over to the shelf where he had the tools and scraps of wood. He brought them to his workbench, and as fast as he could, he began to carve little square boxes to resemble tefillin. He glued the sides together as the others around him watched, astonished by his courage and ingenious idea. A few men built a fire, and soon the boxes were tossed in. Two people removed the leather belts and threw them into the fire, as well to resemble the ritzuos of the tefillin that had once again been hidden. The guard came in, saw the fire, inspected it closely, and walked out with a satisfied smile on his devious face. But the tefillin now was securely hidden, remained intact. Rabbi Yonah and his friends cried as they thanked Hashem for the miracle amidst their agony. Rabbi Yonah guarded the protected his tefillin for the remaining time of his incarceration at Markstadt. When he was finally liberated, his treasured tefillin was still intact, and he was able to leave the camp, clutching them tightly in his hands. Now, decades later, the precious legacy of Rabbi Yonah's adherence to the mitzvah of tefillin lives on. The tefillin were recently checked by a sefer who verified that they are perfectly valid. However, he did advise against their being used on a regular basis. Today, every grandson of Rabbi Yonah's is given the honor of putting these extraordinary tefillin on his bar mitzvah day. Tefillin have always symbolized the boy who becomes a man. Here it symbolized how a man became a legend. This is a koyach of tefillin. Tefillin has a koyach to make a man into a legend. Has a koyach to understand that we don't have any left arms. Both our arms are right arms. If chas v'chalil, a person is in a situation such as this, where the Nazis, Rachmanin Litzlan, beat him to almost till he's dead, and he can go and keep put on tefillin the next day, that's a koyach of a yid. The Satmarov, Zeichet Sadek v'Kodesh v'Brachos, after the war, he was asked, after all the Gdolim were killed, who to go to for Brachos? He said, anyone who could put tefillin on over his number, you can go to him for a bracha. And how many thousands of people did? Thousands of people. That's a koyach of a yid. If he wouldn't be like that, then he wouldn't keep the mitzvahs. That's the first idea. The first idea is yodcho. Ask him, Rachel, why does it say yodcho? Why put it on your right arm? Why put it on your left arm? Because you don't have a left arm. Both our hands should be right arms. That's one idea. There's Naim the Torah says a very, very beautiful vort over here. He says that there are two elements over here of tefillin. One is, as a Shulchan Aruch brings down, V'yishabil HaKadosh Baruch Hu HaNeshama Shei B'Moyach V'gam HaLev Shu Ikar Taivas HaMachshavos U'Bezeh Yisko V'Nirch Shel Yad. Okay, in other words, the idea is to put it on your hand, is to represent the koyach of your hands. You know, working with your hands. He says, Rabbi Zayin HaTorah says, it's very easy for a person to train himself to do mitzvahs. A person can train himself to get out of bed for Shachris. Put your alarm clock on it, make it into a habit. It's a good habit, it's a good thing to do. But it's easy to train yourself to do mitzvahs. It comes before sukkahs, you buy yourself lulav and esrog, you train yourself. When it comes to Pesach, you train yourself not to eat chomets, eat matzah. You can train yourself in action. Asiyah sam mitzvahs is not that difficult. Doing a mitzvah is not that difficult. The performance, the actual doing of the mitzvah, physically performing a mitzvah, has challenges, but it's not that difficult. What is difficult is the machshava. So he says, in both places it says yodcho, yodcho. It says do it with your hand. Lo isal yodcho. It should be a sign on your hand. What's the sign supposed to represent? to do mitzvahs, use your body, use your koichas that you have physically to perform the active mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, that is stage number one. Stage number two is actually changing who you are. Not changing what you do. Changing who you are. Changing the way you think. The way you relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The machshavas you have. Not only getting to the shachris in the morning, driving there, getting out of bed and driving there, and going, you're keeping all the laws along the way. But when you come into davening, to be mistabik to Rebbeinu Shalom, to connect your machshava to Rebbeinu Shalom, to control your thoughts, to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's yichidus, to connect with the avdus inside you. In other words, to totally control your mind in order to be an Eved Hashem totally. That is a far more difficult stage. That's not in action anymore, that's in thought. Says Ramesha, that doesn't come straight away. Not Ramesha, sorry, the Zayin HaTorah. Reb Sarotsky said that doesn't come straight away. He says, first of all, you make your vohela chola ois oidecho ulu zikorein beininecho. It's remembrance between your eyes. You remember there's Rabbeinu Shleilam? Yeah, I remember. But it's not yet you. Later on in the Torah, you do that often enough. It's the toitafois beininecho. Toitafois is like a drip. It goes again and again and again into your head until eventually it becomes in your head. It becomes part of your actions. It becomes part of your thoughts. It becomes you. You can actually change the way you think. That's why it starts off as a koran, and eventually the tefillin can become a toitafois beininecho. It becomes like it drips inside you. I've been loshing over here. Hine yitifolonu lemoyach asher beineinu shehashem hu alekim. In other words, it drips, goes right into our head that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in control. And not only can we change the way we act, but we can change the way we think. That's why he says, even in the way we act, listen to this, Gevaldige Chab, even in the way we act is a difference. In beginning of the parasha, it's Yod Chos spelled Yud Dalet Chof. Masculine, strong, right? Later on in the parasha, it's Yud Dalet Chof He. It is Yad Keho. Asks Rabbi Sarotsky, why do we change Yodcha to Yodcha? Why do you say Yodcha once in a Lashon of strength and to Yodcha later on in the parasha, Lashon of weakness? So he says, once you get it into your head, once it's Toitafois Beininecho, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world totally, then you realize how weak your hand is. You realize what you thought beforehand, that you're the one performing, you're the one making the money, you're the one controlling your life, is actually Yodcha. It's actually a very weak hand. You don't really have such a strong hand. You are ultimately controlled by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rotzen. So at the beginning it starts with Yodcha as a strong hand. When a toitafoi suddenly, eventually gets to you, and you realize it's dripping into your subconscious, into your thought process, HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, then you realize, I've got a Yodcha, I've got a weaker hand. Understand why I love his nine material? Yeah? That's Pshat. Poshet Pshat. That's a koyach. Tefillin has a koyach. Tefillin has a strength. Not only to make a person act differently, tefillin has a strength to make a person change the way he thinks, change who he is. There's another incredible, incredibly touching story I read from Pesach Kron. It's a story called Bound to His Father. The following is one of the most moving stories I've ever heard. I'm grateful to be Teitelbaum, principal of Yeshiva Greater Washington in Maryland, for sharing it with me. The young man in the story is a prize student in his yeshiva. In the summer of year 2000, 16-year-old Mordechai Keller volunteered to help in a Hebrew home for the aged in Greater Washington. One of his responsibilities was to invite the residents to attend the daily services in the synagogue on the first floor. Some agreed and others refused, but even those who declined were pleasant about it. There was one man on the second floor, however, who had been quite nasty. He had even cursed another volunteer when he was asked to join the minyan. The volunteer was taken aback by the man's screaming, so Mordechai undertook the challenge of speaking to the angry gentleman himself. Mordechai found the man sitting in a wheelchair in a lounge filled with residents in their home. After introducing himself, Mordechai said softly but firmly, "If you don't wish to join the services, we can respect that. But why should he curse a volunteer? He is here to help you and is just doing his job." "Young man," the elderly gentleman said sternly, "wheel me to my room, I'll tell you a story." When they were there in the room, the old man told the story of horror, pain and sadness. He came from a prominent religious family in Poland, and when he was 12 years old, he and his family were taken to a Nazi concentration camp. They were all killed except for him and his father. In the barracks, there was a man who had smuggled in a tefillin shal roish, the tefillin worn on their head. Every day the men in the barracks would try to seize an opportunity to put on that tefillah, even for a moment, when there was no Nazi guards nearby. The men knew that they hadn't fulfilled the mitzvah of donning tefillah in Shaliyad, but the love for mitzvahs compelled them to do whatever they possibly could. The man continued, "But for my father that wasn't enough. My bar mitzvah was coming up, and he wanted that, at least on the day of my bar mitzvah, I wear a complete set of tefillin." He had heard that in a barracks down the road, a man had been killed who had owned a complete pair of tefillin. On the morning of my bar mitzvah, my father, at great risk, went out early to the other barracks to get the tefillin. I was waiting by the window with trepidation. In the distance, I could see him rushing to get back. As he came closer, I could see that he was carrying something cupped in his hands. As he got to the barracks, a Nazi stepped out from behind a tree and shot him and killed him right before my eyes. When the Nazi left, I ran out and took the pouch of tefillin that lay on the ground next to my father. I managed to hide it. The old man peered angrily at Mordechai and said, "How can anyone pray to a God who would kill a boy's father right in front of him? I can't." The man pointed to the dresser against the wall and said, "Open the top drawer." In the drawer, Mordechai saw an old black tefillin pouch, crusted for many years of not being used. "Bring me the pouch," the man ordered. Mordechai complied. The man opened and took out an old pair of tefillin. "This is what my father was carrying on that fateful day. I keep it to show people that what my father died for, these dirty black boxes and straps. These were the last things I got from my father." Mordechai was stunned. He had no words, no comfort to give. He could only pity the poor man who had lived his life in anger, bitterness and sadness. "I'm sorry," he finally stammered softly. I didn't realize. Mordechai left the room, resolved never to come back to the man again. When he came home that evening, he couldn't sleep nor eat. He returned to the home the next day but avoided the old man's room. A few days later, as Mordechai was helping the men who had come to the shul, one of them said, "I have yahrzeit today and I need to say a Kaddish. We only have 9 men here today. You think you can get me a 10th man? Mordechai had already made the rounds that morning and had been refused by many of the residents. They were too tired, not interested, or half asleep. The only one who hadn't approached was an old man on the second floor. Reluctantly and hesitantly, he went upstairs. He knew the old man would scold him, but he still had to make the effort. He knocked on the door gently and announced himself. "It's you again," the old man asked. "I'm so sorry to trouble you," Mordechai said softly, "but there's a man in shul who needs to say Kaddish today. We need you for a minyan. Would you mind coming just this one time?" The old man looked up at Mordechai and said, "If I come this time, then you'll leave me alone?" Mordechai wasn't expecting that response. "Yes," he said in Rispa, "I won't bother you again." To this day, Mordechai doesn't know why he then said what he did. He could have infuriated the old man, but for some reason Mordechai blurted out, "Would you like to bring your tefillin?" Mordechai braced himself for a bitter retort, but instead the man said again, "If I bring them, will you leave me alone?" "Yes," Mordechai said, "I'll leave you alone." "All right," the man said, "then wheel me downstairs and make sure that I'm in the back of the shul so I can get out first." Mordechai wheeled the old man to the shul and brought him to the back. "May I help you?" Mordechai asked as he took the tefillin out of the pouch. The gentleman put out his left hand. Mordechai helped him put on the tefillin and left the synagogue to do other work. After the services, Mordechai returned and the shul was empty except for the old man. He was still wearing his tefillin and tears were running down his cheeks. "Shall I get a doctor or a nurse?" Mordechai asked. The man didn't answer. Instead, he was staring down at the straps of his tefillin wrapped on his left arm, caressing them with his right hand and repeating over and over again, "Tati, Tati, it feels so right." The old man looked up at Mordechai and said, "For the last half an hour, I felt so connected to my Tati. I feel as though he has come back to me." Mordechai took the man back to his room, and he was about to leave. The old man said, "Please come back for me tomorrow." And so every morning, Mordechai would go to the second floor, and the old man would be waiting for him at the elevator holding his tefillin. Mordechai would wheel him into the shul where he would sit in the back wearing his tefillin, holding his siddur, absorbed in his thoughts. One morning Mordechai got off the elevator on the second floor, but the man wasn't there. He hurried to his room. His bed was empty. Instinctively he became afraid. He ran to the nurse's station, asked where the gentleman was, and they told him. He had been rushed to the hospital in the previous afternoon, and late in the day he had had a stroke and died. A few days later Mordechai was given an award by the Jewish home for his work as a volunteer. After the ceremonies, a woman approached him and thanked him for all he had done for her. Mordechai had no recollection of this woman. "Excuse me," Mordechai said, "do I know you?" "I am the daughter of the man who helped," she said softly. "He was my father and he did so much for him. You made his last days so wonderfully comfortable. When he was in the hospital, he called me frantically and asked me to bring his tefillin. He wanted to double one more time with them. I helped him with his tefillin in the hospital and then he had a stroke. He died wearing them, bound to his father in heaven." That's a koyach. How tefillin have a koyach to make a person think differently. How a man can be a bitter old man, Rachman Litzlan, being a poishli sol begufoi, and you can take him and to be a person who connects as a true Baal Tshuva. That's the Koyach of Tefillin. I also want to finish off with one beautiful piece of Shimshon Pinkus. A little bit up the side, but it's a beautiful piece. He says, what's the idea today? Let's just back a little. Tefillin is a koyach to make our avodas Hashem, our actions, more focused. Tefillin has a koyach to change the way we think, to focus the way we think. There's another element, and that is there's a certain education that tefillin gives us. And there's a major difference between the education Rashi gives us and what we see today with tefillin shel Rabbeinu Tam. Very, very interesting. The difference, the main difference between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam is where you put the parashas, the way the order of the parashas. According to Rashi, the full parashas of Shema Yisrael, Fohoya im Shemaya, Kadeshi Kol B'chor and Vohoy Ki V'yachol. Okay, so you have Shema Yisrael, Vohoy im Shemaya, Kadeshi Vohoy Ki V'yachol. The Rabbeinu Tam changes the third and the fourth. The first two, Shema and Vohoy im Shemaya, are the same, but he puts Vohoy Ki V'yachol before the Kadeshli, and therefore that's what you know, it's known as by the Rishonim, Havayis Be'emsa. The Vohoy is an Emsa, then Kadeshli. What's the Machlekus over here? What's the idea behind this? So be aside, according to the Kadmonim, Shema is connected. There's four parashas connected, Yudke Vovke. Again, not going too deep into here, but just follow it. There's Yudke Vovke. Okay? Shema, the first parashas connected the Yud. Vahoyim Shemaya is connected the He. Kadashli is connected the Vov. And Vahoy Kivyacha is connected the second Hashem. So Yudke Vovke in order according to these parashas. Which makes perfect sense according to Rashi. According to Rabbeinu Tam, however, what we're doing is Yud K, Hey Vov. Right? In other words, if we switch them round, then Mahoy Kiviyacha comes for Kaddishi, it's not Yud K Vov K, it's Yud K Hey Vov. What's the idea of flipping around? What's the idea of changing one before the other? So Shimsha Pinkus has a very beautiful idea, and he says that there's a certain level of education that Klal Yisrael have from generation to generation. There's a process. A child goes to cheder, he gets taught at home the aleph base, and he goes to cheder, and then he turns into a cheder boy, and he has his chalaka, and then he goes into a school, and he learns the Mishnayos and Gemara, and then eventually goes to yeshiva. He becomes more developed, and hopefully, by becoming more and more developed, he becomes more and more tuned to his Yerushalayim and to his avoidedness world. He said, but it's not always the case. He says sometimes one can be at a level of nothing, and suddenly a lightning flash from Shemaim can completely flip a person over. He said he brings two stories. One story he brings based on a medrash. The pasuk says, "Vayireach es reach begodov." Yitzchok smelt the smell of his clothing. Vayireach es reach begodov. He smelt the smell of his clothes. Yitzchok smelt the smell of Yaakov's clothes. And then the medrash says, "Bereishis Rabbah es reach boigdov." He smelt the beautiful smell of those Yidden who don't keep the mitzvahs. Says a medrash, even a Yid who doesn't keep the mitzvahs is just a covering, but inside there's something beautiful. There's what you call the pintel Yid. There's a little flame inside there. And the Gemara brings a story about Yosef Meshisa. Yosef Meshisa was a Yid who kept absolutely nothing, to such an extent the Romans were the time when they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, they were afraid to go into the Beis HaMikdash. Who knows? The Shechina's over there. So they said to a Yid, you go in, and when you come out, you can take whatever you want. And this Yid had less Yerushalayim than the Romans, and he went in, and he came out holding a beautiful menorah. So the Romans said to him, you can't keep that. This is not a kli for a regular person. This is a kli for a king. You can't keep that. Go back in and take something else out. He said, no, I'm not going to take something else out. So listen, we'll give you 2 years of taxes. No, I'm not going in. And they tried to force him to go in, and he refused to such an extent they tortured him. They literally tortured him. And he refused to go in. He says, die, it's enough. He says, it's enough that I got Kosh Baruch annoyed one time. I'm going to get Kosh Baruch annoyed again. So he says, Oy Sheikh Asiyas Boiri. And eventually, Nebuch, he died. He died during the torture. They refused to go in. That's one story. Long story, person who was nothing, and he got an inspiration from Shemayim, and he's willing to give up his life to do something a few minutes beforehand he's very happy to do. The second Maisa is a Maisa of in a concentration camp again. Sorry for being so extreme, but it's important to get the message across. In one of there was a Nazi guard there who wanted very much a Jewish inmate to eat a piece of non-kosher meat, and his people were starving. So, you know, a piece of non-kosher meat people should die for, quite literally. They should really, you know, they should love to eat a piece of meat. So he goes to a yid. He didn't even realize he was a chiloni. He kept nothing, and he says, "You've got to eat this piece of meat." So this not from yid said, "There's no way I'm eating it. I'm Jew." He said, "What do you mean you're a Jew? So what? You eat this piece of meat, or I'll kill you." He said, "Do whatever you want, but I'm not eating this piece of meat." And they took this person, they beat him up until he was mamish bloody pulp. This person was happy just beforehand to eat meat. Now he realized how much the goyim wanted yid to be over an avera, and what a mitzvah really is. He was willing to be moiser nefesh in order not to do it. Says Rav Shimshon Pinkus, Rashi's tefillin is all about yud, kei, vav, kei, all about structure. Going through a process of working through with the tefillin shel yad, with the tefillin shel rosh, growing in one's avodas Hashem, growing in the madrigas. He says sometimes we have a Rabbeinu Tam. Sometimes we have, in the history of Klal Yisrael, we have Rabbeinu Tam Yidden. We have people who were not given those opportunities of learning about Torah, of working through from the time they were young and getting in the mother's milk, as it were, mamish, the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And something happened that they flipped over, they switched over. And they became, suddenly they realized, I'm going to become a Yid with a Mesiris Nefesh, and then I'm going to learn. I'm going to first keep the mitzvahs, and then I'm going to learn. So that is a koyach of Yud Kei Hei Vav. Sometimes it's not necessarily in order, but that is a koyach of tefillin. Koyach of tefillin is at certain times HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives in the generations of Klal Yisrael the opportunity to become great, even without the normal order of events that makes a person into Yirei Shamayim. We're living in a generation of Balei Tshuva. We're living in a generation of Geirim. We're living in a generation of even those people who are brought up from, but sometimes they don't have necessarily the Yirei Shamayim and the Dveikus of Kodesh Baruch, and the Kodesh Baruch gives them a message. We've got to take this tefillin and put it on our heads. We've got to take this tefillin and make our work, our pu'ulus, our physical actions different. Eventually get our thought process different. To become mamash atotafoy, to become dovak to Rebbeinu Shleilam. To realize that our right hand is both our arms. We have no left hand, there's no weakness in doing mitzvahs. And Be'ez Hashem, with a structure of Yudke Vovke, we should become closer and closer to Rebbeinu Shleilam. And if not, we ask the Kodesh Baruch Hu to give us the inspiration in the derech of Ava, in the derech of Nes, that we should realize Hashem Hu Elokim, that ultimately He is the one who took us out of Mitzrayim, and to be mistabak to Rebbeinu Shleilam, and have these kavanos when put on tefillin, that we have no right hand. It's all a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Both our hands are right hand, the strong hands when it comes to mitzvahs. We have the koyach of controlling our thoughts. We have the control of making our actions be perfectly enthusiastic, all for Rebbeinu Shleilam, and Be'ez Hashem, our tefillin, when we put on tomorrow, will be different. Knowing these people who are moiser nefesh for tefillin, people are moiser nefesh for their lives, in order for the tefillin, we're so lucky to have this tremendous mitzvah. Let's try and maximize it to the best of our potential.